Hi, I'm Eric Zivian, co-director of Valley of the Moon Music Festival. Welcome to the VMMF podcast. VMMF is an annual summer festival in Sonoma, California, presenting classical and romantic music on historic instruments. Our podcast features in-depth conversations with performing artists, composers, and scholars from around the world who will enlighten us about all the great music we'll be sharing with you in our 10th season. And now, please welcome our podcast host and my festival co-director, Tanya Tompkins.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tanya Tompkins, and I'm so excited to be here today with our guest, Yavet Boyajiev. Hi, Yavet.
Hi, Tanya.
Thank you for being with us. We are so excited to have you here because it's really because of you that we programmed an entire concert around the composer Jose White. And I'm sure many of the people listening right now don't know who Jose White is, and you're actually writing a book on him. You also helped us with the programming to suggest other composers that we could add to this concert who were his influences or colleagues. The name of the concert is Jose White and His Circle, and you'll also be doing a lecture before that concert. But first, before we talk about Jose White, this wonderful composer, I just wanted to learn a little bit more about you and how you came to be interested in this composer and writing a book about him.
Well, first of all, thank you very much to you and the other organizers of the festival. I'm very happy to be participating because, like I told you when we spoke, I think this concept of performances with lectures is a very good combination because I think it's very interesting for the audience to get an idea about the context where the music was created and who were the people behind these compositions, right? I think it's very interesting. And I think sometimes in classical music, we miss a little bit of the personal contact with the audience, the possibility of the audience to be able to interact with the performer or to be able to interact with the lecturer about the music they heard or they're going to hear. I think this is very enriching. So thank you for doing it this way.
Yeah, my pleasure. I mean, I always like to learn more about the composers that I'm performing. And certainly if I'm listening to composers that I haven't ever heard of before, I love hearing more about it. And I'm actually learning so much just by programming this season. And it's really just because of talking to people like you who have spent a lifetime thinking about these things. In fact, before we start talking about that and about you, I think we should let our listeners hear a little bit of Jose White's probably most famous work, would you say, La Bella Cubana?
Yes.
And that was you performing, and it's your arrangement of a piano trio with Jin Ok Lee and Clara Yang. And let's just take a listen so people know what we're talking about.
Thank you. What we heard was a piano arrangement I did. The piece was originally written for two violins and piano. And he also wrote an arrangement for two violins and piano and two violins and orchestra.
And when was this written about?
This was written in his late period, between 1910 and 1914. He died in 1918. So it's definitely music that shows a little bit of nostalgia for Cuba.
Yeah, and when he wrote it, was he in Cuba at the time or had he already left and did he die someplace else?
He was in Paris. In fact, it was his late years in Paris. He died about 4 or 5 years after this piece was published.
So before we dive in a little bit more to Jose White and his circle, tell us about you. And we know that you're a violinist now, a very good violinist, and also that you're writing a book about this composer. And how did that come to be?
Well, every child born in Cuba, I think we have heard La Bella Cubana, the piece that our audience just heard. It's the most famous piece. And we have heard the name of Jose White. But there is a lot that is not known in Cuba. So I had the fortune that my father, who, by the way, was not born in Cuba, was born in Bulgaria. His name was Radosław Bojajev. He was a violinist and a pedagogue. He studied with George Enescu, who is, I would say the most famous musician from Romania, right? It turns that Enescu studied with Jose White in Paris.
Ah, so there's a whole lineage of why you're interested in Jose White. And this also explains your name is Yaved Boyajiev, and I was thinking that didn't sound very Cuban, so that's the reason, I guess.
Yes, because my father was Bulgarian. But anyway, it was my father who introduced me to the music of White, and I think when he studied with Enescu, he learned about White's etudes, Opus 13, which are really incredible for pedagogical reasons, but also for musical reasons, because White brought elements of Cuban music into them, which is quite unusual in the Franco-Belgian literature for violin. I think all Cuban violinists and violin students in Cuba, they know about them, but they're seldomly played. I mean, they're played in the studio, right? Like I also gave them to my students when I was teaching in Bangkok. And these are very useful pieces, but you don't hear them in concert. And actually, they are very valuable. In fact, I would say that they are some of the most important pieces that he wrote. And they were accepted in the Paris Conservatory in the official curriculum for violin in 1868, which is something very, very remarkable.
Let's take a minute and actually listen to it right now while we're talking about it. Which number etude would you suggest that we hear?
Perhaps number 6 is very, very melodic, dedicated Secundino Arango, yes.
Okay, so this is Jose White and his etudes.
Number 6, Opus 13.
Opus 13, and I think they're really difficult to play, aren't they, Yvette?
Yes, that's why they are not played very often.
Well, let's hear it now, and this is violinist Antal Zalai, and he's the first violinist to record all of these etudes by Jose White. This one is etude number 6, Opus 13. Thank you. I'm really curious how you got interested, but I'm learning more already that your father has a big connection to Jose White. And then studying in Cuba, you had exposure to these etudes. And did you practice them yourself growing up?
I did. And like I said, I gave them to my advanced students at Mahidol University when I was teaching in Bangkok. Then when they played these pieces in juries, I had colleagues interested in this music. What is this? What are you playing? Because the two are actually very good as teaching material and as music. But I think you asked me how I started researching about White, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I was doing my doctoral dissertation, I was looking for a topic related to violin pedagogy. What happened is that when I started going around the etudes to write something about White, I realized that very little had been actually researched about him, and that a lot of errors, a lot of things that didn't make sense had been repeated through the years, through generations. But in reality, very little was known about him. And this was the beginning of a pretty big snowball that hasn't stopped, really, because as I am preparing the manuscript, I am still finding things. And, you know, the process has been quite interesting, and I don't even know how to describe it. It hasn't finished. I am writing the manuscript, but I still, from time to time, I'm finding even new music. For example, his violin concerto, which is one of his best pieces, is not his only violin concerto. It's his second violin concerto.
And so we don't know where his first concerto is?
First one is lost, unfortunately. But the fact that now I know that this is the second is interesting, because then that means that he wrote one before. So the one that we know reflects a process of maturity. It's not a first attempt. When he wrote his first one, he had not even left Cuba yet. The one that we know was written in France.
Like many of his more known works, it seems. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was quite well known in Paris during his time, I think. Is that true? And I'm just wondering, as you say, there's so very little written about him, and just so excited to read your book about him, actually, because it seems like it's long overdue that somebody puts together all of these wonderful facts about his life and brings it to light for everybody. He seems like a very important figure. And I just wonder how that happened, that suddenly we all forgot about him.
Well, I think there were many people that became just forgotten in history. It seems that many women composers became forgotten,
mm-hmm.
and also many musicians who were Afro-descendant got forgotten as well. And I think somehow this is changing. So there has been a little bit of a revival. Now we know about women composers, about musicians that are Afro-descendant, that were really helping to the development of Western culture. Not only musicians, but also writers, also, you know, artists and even politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has to do with society. It's just that certain people were not taken in consideration when history was being written, you know. You and I studied music history according to the Western musical canon, right?
Right.
How many women composers were there?
Maybe none when I studied.
Or, for example, being that we are in the United States, how many Afro-American musicians did you know when you went to school to study music?
Yeah, for classical music, hardly any.
Exactly. But now you have probably heard a few names. And to be honest, I think a lot of this we owe to extremely good musicologists and academics that have been digging in the history. For example, the other day I was reading papers by Paula Higgins. She was the first one who was talking about the music of Fanny Hensel. And I think now everybody has heard at least the name of Fanny Mendelssohn, right?
Yes.
But in the 80s, nobody knew. So when you go back and you read the papers written by people like her, and you start placing these covers in context, you realize that these have been major jumps in the expansion of the canon. Right now, we are accepting that there was Clara Schumann, there was Fanny Mendelssohn, there was, you know, I don't know, Barbra Streisand, and many more. But go back to the 80s, And basically, we had not heard about any of them, right?
Absolutely. In fact, till very recently, we programmed Fanny Mendelssohn's string quartet a couple of years ago on our festival. And I'll never forget that I didn't know the piece before. And my co-director, Eric, played a little bit of it for me, a recording of it, not telling me who it was. And he said, "Do you know who this composer is?" And I was listening and I said, "Oh, that's such interesting music. It sounds sort of like Mendelssohn, only better."
Uh-huh.
And so now we know her music and we're playing it and we're discovering how incredible it is. And just because she got written out of history and then is being brought back, as you say, by all these wonderful musicologists and people's curiosity and wanting to make classical music a more inclusive place.
Yes.
We have now access to all these incredible composers that we didn't know before.
Yes, yes.
You know, we talked about the violin concerto a little bit, and maybe this is a good time just to listen to a bit of Rachel Barton-Pine's recording of that. So when Jose White was more known, when he was in Paris, can you tell us a little bit about his life and that time and what he was doing? Was he mostly performing as a violinist? Was he mostly a composer? What was his life like?
Well, in the beginning, when he left Cuba in 1855, he went to study. And that's when he became co-disciple of Sarasate in the class of Ballard. Sarasate is another composer we are programming in our concert, Jose White Circle. So this period, first when he was a student at the conservatory, and then he spent 20 more years in Paris, he was founding chamber music societies. He was teaching as a substitute of his teacher Allard at the Paris Conservatory. He was composing. This is the period when he wrote these tunes that we spoke about, the Opus 13, but also he wrote his violin concerto, the one that we just heard by Rachel Barton-Pine. This concerto, he premiered it in 1867, and it got incredible reviews. Now, don't ask me why. I don't have the answer. I mean, this is something that I wish I could call him on the phone and say, why you never perform it again? He premiered it in 1867. And then we had to wait until the 1970s for a professor of Brooklyn College. His name was Paul Glass, who went to Paris, got the manuscript, published it in an edition, Baldwin Mills, I think. Mm-hmm. And then in 1974, we had the modern premiere of this concerto by none other than Ruggero Ricci with the Symphony of the New World in New York. And then 3 years later, Aaron Rosen performed it with the New York Phil. And then Rosen was the first one to record it in 1975 with this big edition of Black composers' music. And then later in 1997, Barton-Pine recorded it. And then she did a 25th anniversary edition in which the concerto is featured again. In my opinion, this is one of his great pieces. He was not a very prolific composer. I mean, he doesn't have an incredible amount of of publications. He didn't, because he did many other things. He was performing, he was teaching, he was traveling, he was conducting concerts. He was a very complete musician. So he was not dedicated only to composition or mainly to composition, right? But if there are three pieces that will stand the test of time in the violin repertory are the Violin Concerto, the Sixth Etude Opus 13, and the Etudes for Two Violins Opus 33.
You mentioned that he performed in New York. One of the other composers that's on Jose White and his circle at the festival is Gottschalk. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this American composer and what their relationship was.
Well, Gottschalk was incredibly important. Gottschalk was the one that I would say, quote unquote, because nobody likes to be, you know, discovered when, you know, it's like Columbus discovered America that was always there, you know. This word is kind of weird. But Gottschalk, quote unquote, discovered White, because White was a very young, talented boy in Matanzas who played the violin and many other instruments, who composed popular dances, popular music, and also religious music, and was very, very well known in his hometown. But nobody knew him outside of that place. And then Gottschalk was in Cuba in 1854 playing concerts, and he went to play in Matanzas. And it was customary that foreign musicians would go into a country, into a place, and they would collaborate with local artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he went to Matanzas, somehow he got to know Jose White. And he was so impressed that he invited him to play with him in his premiere. So White was an invited soloist in Gottschalk's debut concert in Matanzas. And I tell you, what happened was that Gottschalk was the one who encouraged the family to send White to study in Paris. And the same he did with Cervantes. Actually, before I started talking to you, I was listening to Jorge Luis Prat playing Cervantes dances. I don't get tired of that music, really.
Jorge Luis Prat is such an incredible Cuban pianist who's still alive, of course. And you mentioned Cervantes, so I'd love to just let them hear a little bit of that right now. So that was Soledad, played by Jorge Luis Prats, the famous Cuban pianist. And tell us about Cervantes, because he will also be on the program.
Well, Cervantes, in the year 1854, when Gottschalk went to Cuba, about 7, 8 years old, and Gottschalk heard him. And in the same way, he encouraged Jose White to go to Paris, he encouraged Cervantes. And Cervantes later went to Paris to study with Marc Montel in the conservatoire. And eventually he went back to Cuba. Cervantes became such a favorite musician in Havana. And his relationship with White is that they collaborated a lot in concerts. And this was the same thing that happened with White and Espadero. Espadero was Cervantes' teacher and was a very interesting musician, because Espadero was a pianist who never left Cuba, but was very famous in France, for example. In Europe, people knew about him. His music was being published. His music has great influence of Chopin. And Gottschalk and him became very good friends, to the point that Gottschalk designated him to edit his posthumous works.
Uh-huh.
And after Gottschalk died in Sicily in 1869, Espadero wrote a piece in his honor called Sous la Tombe de Gottschalk.
So before we continue, I would love to share some music of Espadero right now. What would you suggest we listen to?
I would like you, Tania, to choose any of the recordings made by Cecilio Tieles, who actually we owe him the knowledge about Espadero, because he was the first scholar who studied this composer and who was forgotten pretty much, and published a book about him and then recorded many of his pieces.
So that was Espadero's Nocturne. And also, we have discussed Gottschalk a lot, and I'd actually like to just have people listen for a minute right now to his piece Banjo, which is so famous and so fun to listen to, just to get a flavor of who he was. Clearly, he was all over the globe, literally, and also very interested in championing these other composers and players that he met in Cuba, but also in other places in the world as well. So, Yvette, thank you so much for teaching us about Jose White and his music and his whole circle. There are so many composers on here that now I just want to know more about, and I'm just so honored to be able to present them on our festival. And it's really because of you and your research and meeting you, and I'm really grateful for that. And I wish that I could play a recording right now for everybody of Jose White. I wish I could hear him play. But instead, we'll go out with a little bit more of Rachel Barton Pine's performance of his violin concerto in F sharp minor. And thank you so much, Yvette. We look forward to your virtual lecture on July 13th. Will be presented by Kate Van Orden, and then we'll Zoom you in for questions. And thank you so much again for being with us.
Thank you, Tania, and to all the organizers in the festival. It's really a pleasure, and I hope that the audience will enjoy the lecture and the concert.
thanks for listening to our podcast. You can learn more about us, including our off-season events, at www.valleyofthemoonmusicfestival.org. We want to thank Kimberly and Simon Blattner, our entire board and staff, producer Christos Vainas, and editor Nick Reeves for making this podcast possible. Please join us again next month, and we hope to see you at the Summer Festival.